special emergency edition today regarding your New York Knickerbockers. As always, I'm joined by my guy, Nick Martinez. What's up, Nick?
I'm despondent. I'm no longer a Knicks fan. I don't want to talk about the Knicks. I'm now accepting offers from other teams for my fanship. The front runner is the Miami Heat, but I'm still accepting bids. So if we can get to a bidding war for my fanship, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that sounds good. And we're also going to be joined today by Hoops Inquirer insider and reporter extraordinaire Trey Rodriguez. How you doing, Trey?
I'm doing good, but with an intro like that, I'm bound to disappoint. Well, but I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
You know, like any Knicks fans, I think, are doing. I think despondent was a good word for it. Let's get into it, though, and let's talk about what's been just a baffling few days for the Knicks, I guess, even though it's par for the course, really. Like, baffling only in the sense that you think that maybe after Phil Jackson was fired, it seemed like the Knicks were kind of trending toward normalcy, right? Like, they drafted Nikolina, and they've kind of had their first-round picks, and, like, you know, they seemed like they were going to sit at free agency, and then, boom, all of a sudden, Woj drops a bomb. Tim Hardaway Jr. has agreed to a 4-year deal with the New York Knicks. And, like, everyone's like, okay, that in and of itself is a whole joke, because he was the guy that they traded for Jerian Grant, and then they traded Jerian Grant for Derrick Rose, and then they renounced Derrick Rose in order to sign Tim Hardaway. But, like, you can kind of talk yourself into that, right? Like, if you said you're signing Tim Hardaway for, like, I don't know, 4 years and $50 million, like, you're okay with that. He's a young wing. He can shoot. Like, that's the position of need, right? Then it comes out that it's 4 years for $71 million. And I think my jaw literally hit the floor when I heard that. So let me ask you, Trey, what did you hear about this when it was happening? Because, you know, reports came out where it was, like, people within the Knicks, not only around the league, but, like, within the Knicks organization, were shocked by this contract that they offered Tim Hardaway Jr. So what kind of insight do you have on that for us?
I think caught a lot of people off guard. It came out of nowhere. The attention was mostly on the potential Carmelo Anthony trade and the whole replacing Phil Jackson. So it came out of nowhere in a lot of ways. And there certainly were a lot of people within the organization. I know some of the people that I spoke to, when they found out about it, they were like, okay, great, we got him back, but at that price, it's a little crazy. And, you know, there was, and me and Nick have been reporting on this for a couple of weeks now. Actually, the split within the front office of the Knicks, the Jackson guys versus, you know, the Dolan guys, the regime of old. And, you know, a lot of the guys that vouched for Hardaway to come back were of the regime of old. Mills in particular felt that the Knicks basically gave up a little too quickly on Tim Hardaway Jr., and that's why they wanted to, you know, they knew what they were getting with him, as opposed to Jonathan Simmons and some of the other names of the quote-unquote young guys that they were eyeing. But, you know, at that price, it was a really unnecessary move, and I think that all it really was is Mills trying to, you know, show that he's capable of doing something and eventually being retained, whether as GM or president. I think more so was a power move by Mills to try to prove that he could do something now in the absence of Phil. Whether it was a good move or not is a totally different question. I think it was a terrible move for the price, given that even the Hawks, for the most part, admitted that they were at most going to offer him more or less half of that price. So it came out of nowhere, but in a lot of ways it wasn't surprising at all. You know, Phil Jackson's gone, but the organization has gone back to basically having the guys that were there before Phil. So it's a decision that could have been made today or could have been made 7 or 8 years ago, and, you know, people wouldn't flinch.
Yeah. So basically you think that this was kind of like Steve Mills having more freedom now that Phil Jackson was fired and now that Phil Jackson had ultimate personnel decision making power, and just kind of like, okay, this is a guy that I really liked and who I imagine he had a hand in drafting, and we gave up on too quickly, and I want to make a statement now as the guy in New York, and I'm going to throw a bunch of money at Tim Hardaway to bring him back. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was some tension between Phil and Steve Mills. I think that were it not for the fact that Steve Mills is one of Dolan's guys, I don't necessarily think Mills would have been around during Jackson's tenure. And it also speaks to why he still is around and probably will be around with, you know, whomever it is that they bring in, which could be the direct cause for a problem moving forward. It certainly was with David Griffin, and I'm sure we'll get into that soon.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I want to talk about the Hardaway thing a little bit because, you know, like I said earlier, it's kind of like, you know, you see the rationale for the deal. Like, it's a terrible deal. Like, I think unequivocally it's a terrible deal. But, you know, you kind of see, like, they're going for young guys. They're going for shooting. At least, like, the idea behind the deal is in the right place. So, Nick, let me ask you this. Do you think there's any kind of upside to this deal? Do you think it's an unmitigated disaster? Or do you think that Hardaway can possibly, like, you know, do you think the upside left to improve? Or, like, you know, he definitely got better when he played the Hawks. So what do you think? Do you think there's anything, any positives, any silver linings that can come from this deal?
Hardaway, let's never forget, was an atrocious Knick. I mean, like, look, if we're being honest, like, most Knicks that have been Knicks since Patrick Ewing was trading have been atrocious. But, like, Tim Hardaway was special because he was a black hole. Like, he refused to pass the ball in any circumstances. He, like, almost exclusively took bad shots. And in his rookie season, he was pretty good. Like, his rookie season, like, he shot at, like, a decent clip and whatever. And he didn't have that many minutes, really. So, like, it didn't, like, he didn't have that much time to mess up. But, like, his second season in the league, which ended up being that 17-win bottom-out season, where he just started winning the Knicks games they shouldn't have wanted to win at the end of the season. Like, we saw what it's like when you give a ton of responsibility to Tim Hardaway Jr. It is, like, a lot of bad, like, pull-up threes and pull up like long twos and just ill-advised shots. And like, yes, like he's gotten better in Atlanta. Like, he learned how to play more in a team construct, I think, but he still doesn't pass all that much. His shooting is about the same, but he was also like playing against much higher caliber players than he will be playing with, even if Melo stays in New York. So, like, I don't know, like, is there upside to the deal? Like, yeah, like, the guy's 25, right? He'll be 25 when the season starts. And, like, he's a good, like, he's probably, like, a starting wing now. I think he's, like, a low-end starting wing in the league. And, yeah, like, you got a guy at that age who's, like, that athletic and you can shoot that well. And, you know, who was a first-round pick, there's always a chance for him to improve a lot and to end up, you know, being the kind of thing that you want to take a flyer on. The problem is that they took a flyer on bringing back Tim Hardaway Jr. The problem is they took a flyer on bringing back Tim Hardaway for $71 million.
Can you call a guy that you spend $71 million on, like, a flyer? Like, I feel like if you're spending $71 million on a guy, you better hope that he's like, a little more than the flyer. Like.
Right. So, like, that's the thing, is that he's way too expensive for the sort of move that it is. And I get it. Look, to pry a restricted free agent away from an incumbent team, especially a team that's interested in keeping that free agent, you do have to overpay a bit. But, like, most of what I read was that they probably could have, like, paid maybe, like, $11 to $15 million less on that deal, and the Hawks still wouldn't have matched. So, I don't know. Like, it's bizarre. And the worst thing that could happen, honestly, because the Knicks are going to be bad for a couple years anyways, and maybe Tim Hardaway Jr. being not very good at basketball, relatively, will help him get higher draft picks in the coming years. But, like, the thing I'm really concerned about is that he will never pass the ball to Kristaps Porzingis. Which is, like, that's the Derrick Rose problem, right? Like, Derrick Rose was fine for the Knicks, really. Like, he wasn't, like, very good, but he was, like, serviceable, right? The problem with him was that, like, you're trying to develop this franchise cornerstone player, and he doesn't give him the ball. And that's what's going to happen, I'm afraid, with Tim Hardaway Jr. Although Tim Hardaway could, again, be very good, but I'm just very concerned.
Yeah, you know, and then that kind of brings back to my favorite quote from Steve Mills about this whole thing, where he was like, yeah, we're bringing Tim Hardaway Jr. back to cultivate a team of, like, unselfishness and youth. And I just, like, I had flashbacks to Tim Hardaway just, like, chucking up just awful shots as far as rookie year. And, like, I was like, we talking about the same guy here? but actually, now you say that, that is kind of the silver lining, I think, is that even though they signed Hardaway to this terrible contract, that basically assures that Derrick Rose is not going to re-sign with the Knicks. Which I think Knicks fans everywhere are pretty heavy about. Hopefully Tim Hardaway's time with the Hawks has, like, rubbed some, like, Spurs dust on him. So he'll have a little more unselfishness to his game. But speaking of Derrick Rose, Trey, what have you heard lately about Derrick Rose and what potential destinations for him there are?
Well, in terms of the Knicks, even before the Hardaway move, which obviously does complicate things now if they had ever intended to try to bring him back, before that move, Phil Jackson was interested in bringing him back for a year. But with Phil Jackson getting fired and Mills taking over, Mills has made it quite clear internally that he had no interest in bringing him back. So that was off the table regardless of the Hardaway deal. But they were interested in possibly carrying out a sign-and-trade with Milwaukee should Rose decide to play in Milwaukee. That's off the table now just because they had to renounce his rights to bring in Hardaway. But in terms of destinations, I'm not too sure. I wouldn't say the Clippers anymore since they brought in the quote-unquote the best passer on the planet outside of the United States. But the Clippers are definitely out, I would think. I think Milwaukee still has a strong shot at him. And one team to be mindful of is San Antonio, just because I don't know what their plan is moving forward with Tony Parker. I would think that they have to pivot and do something. Maybe Rose can be serviceable under Popovich. So they're a team to look at. But Milwaukee seems like a very nice fit for him. But ultimately, definitely not the Knicks. I think Mills has been very clear with that, with his guys and his team. And like you said, you know, the Hardaway move makes that a little difficult regardless.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Knicks are pretty adamant in their desire to want to bring in a veteran mentor for Frank Ntilikina in his rookie year. You know, I think he's the youngest player in the league this year. He's like 18 years old. So do you have any insight into what potential targets that the Knicks are looking at? I know Rajon Rondo is a guy that's been mentioned frequently in connection with the team. So is there any credence to those rumors, or what other potential guys could end up in blue and orange?
Well, they're still trying to lure in Rajon Rondo. But it's interesting, man, because the market is drying up very quickly. And a lot of guys that they could have brought back have already been signed. You know, Shoven Mack is already off off the market. George Hill, a lot of guys that could have been decent targets for that are no longer available. So they're going to have to be creative if they strike out on Rondo. I'm not too sure who they could afford at this point, if we're being honest. And they might have to wait for the Carmelo Anthony trade to happen, if it does happen, to clear up space to maybe afford someone, or maybe end up, you know, bringing somebody in via trade. But I don't know at this point. You know, part of the reason that fans were kind of complaining was because they were standing pat for most of the offseason up until the Tim Hardaway Jr. trade. And that's part of it. You know, they failed to go after guys. They didn't even try to retain some of their guys, like Holiday. So I really can't tell you what the plan is or who their targets are at this point. And I don't think it's just because of my lack of knowledge on the situation. I don't think they know. I don't think they know much of anything regarding what it is that they're trying to do. And I think a lot of that is because of, you know, the weird awkwardness currently taking place in the front office. And I think it's the same. They're basically mirroring what's happening in Cleveland, right? Like Cleveland can't even land a Jamal Crawford right now, you know? I think that's just a matter of, you know, the turmoil going on in the front office with both teams.
Yeah, seems very quintessentially Knicks. I want to come back to the Carmelo Anthony trade because I know you guys have done some reporting on that. But really quick before that, Nick, Rondo seems like a guy who, at this point, like Trey said, the market's kind of dried up on point guards. Like, they want a veteran guy, probably on a short-term deal. And I can't imagine Rondo has that many other suitors at this point in his career. Would you like that fit in New York in a post-triangle world? Or do you think that Rondo's a little too volatile? Or does it not even matter?
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've heard, that I've read about Rondo in his past two stints, the one in Chicago and before that in Sacramento, is that, like, young players apparently love him. Like, apparently he's a great mentor and whatever, and, like, that's awesome. If the Knicks are trying to win games, then I might not love Rondo, right, for a lot of reasons, partially because he appears to just never let the coach. Like, he's kind of like Phil Jackson at the bottom, right? Like, Phil Jackson was lording over the top, like, kind of like being like, Jeff Hornacek, like, you can't coach. And, like, if you hire Rondo, he'll be, like, there on the floor being like, yo, Jeff Hornacek, like, you can't coach. But, like, that's not a problem if you're not trying to win games, I don't think. So I think he'd be a fine choice, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like, he's lackluster. He's not what Rajon Rondo was, you know, for example, even, like, the year before Dallas traded for him, before he got injured. he's, like, fine. I don't know. Like, here's the question. Like, do you want Ntilikina to be like Rondo in any capacity? If the answer is yes, then you want Rondo. If the answer is no, then you certainly do not want Rondo at all. Like, I see Ntilikina as, like silly putty. Like whatever you put him near, because he's so young and, like, because he hasn't played in the NBA before, like, whatever you put him near, I feel like he'll become at least a little bit like. So the question is, like, do you want him like Derrick Rose? Do you want him like Rajon Rondo? Like, the answer to both of those things is probably no for you or me. But for Steve Mills, maybe the answer is yes. The real answer, by the way, should have been George Hill. Like, they totally could have offered him. It would have made perfect sense. And, like, there's no reason why you'd want to go to Sacramento instead of the Knicks. Like, they're both not good situations. But yeah, so I don't know. If they, like, they want Ntilikina to be Rondo, that's what they'll do.
Yeah, and, you know, to that, I think it's, like, it's not the worst idea to bring in Rondo. Just because, like, I think Ntilikina, from all accounts, is, like, you know, he's a defensive bulldog, and he really has fire on defense, and he's... And that, I think that's really the biggest knock on Rondo at this point, is, like, he just doesn't play defense, and you know, he can't shoot, which he can, hopefully he can't rub that off on Ntilikina. But, you know, for all the other things, Rondo is, by all accounts, like, a very, very smart player and a very cerebral player, and he's a phenomenal passer, even this stage of his career. You know, I think, like, a one-year deal or, like, maybe a one-year deal for Rondo to help him mentor Ntilikina. It's not the worst idea, you know. Let's go back to the Melo trade, though, because Hoops Inquirer reported that the Knicks and the Rockets were closing in on a deal for Carmelo Anthony. So, Trey, what can you tell me about that? Like, is it stalled out a little bit with the Knicks trying to figure out their whole GM-president situation, or is that still in the works? I imagine there's a 13 that would have to be involved there. So what can you tell us about that?
There are very little details that have leaked out. A lot of this has been done under the table, so to speak. But what I was told is that it's getting done, particularly with Houston. And the reason that this is important is because it basically signals that Cleveland was either unwilling to part with Kevin Love, or just in case, because if they don't part with Kevin Love, it becomes really tricky in terms of the money and the numbers. So it signals that Cleveland was either incapable of parting with Kevin Love, and I don't blame them if that was the case. I don't think they necessarily get better by getting rid of Love just to bring in Anthony. But either they were incapable of parting with Love, or they just weren't, you know, able to put together an offer that was good enough and creative enough for it to literally work. So the Knicks have, for the most part, given up on entertaining the idea of Cleveland trading for Carmelo Anthony. That could change, obviously, assuming Cleveland finds a suitor. But what this signals is that they're now locked in. First of all, you know, the Knicks are committed to trading Carmelo Anthony, and they've kind of gone back and forth on whether Melo might actually still be a Knick come opening night or not. But they want this to happen. They're not interested in a buyout. You know, Carmelo to Cleveland made a lot of sense if he was bought out, but that's not happening. They're committed to trading him. There are very few teams that are actually willing to take him on, or at least capable of making it work. Houston is one of those teams, and from what I was told is that it's definitely happening. And as we reported, over, I think since late June, so it's been a couple of weeks now, they have been engaged with Houston in terms of getting something done. And I think that a lot of the early signs are there, that would lead you to believe that this is going to get done. How soon, that I don't know. I wouldn't expect it to get done within the, you know, next couple of days or anything like that. But they are committed to it, and we've seen something important happen, which is a couple of pieces falling into place. The Rockets finished negotiating with Harden on his extension. The Knicks did a couple of their moves that they felt that they needed to do. So I think that with the recent moves that both Houston and the Knicks have done, it's an early sign that things are finally starting to get rolling. And within the next couple of weeks, we can maybe see it happening. In terms of the details, I don't know at the moment. Early on, two teams that were mentioned as potential suitors to be the third team in the deal were Denver and Portland, where I would assume that whatever return the Knicks are getting is where it would come from. But at the moment, there isn't much aside from the fact that the Knicks in particular are very confident that this is going to get done with Houston. I've seen some reports, which I can't confirm or deny, but I've seen some reports go as far as to say that the Knicks have informed Melo's camp that he'll be going to Houston. And if that's the case, then it certainly is happening. Again, I'm not 100% sure whether that's true or not, but if they have, then it's certainly happening. At that point, that means that both sides have agreed on, you know, the centerpiece of the trade. It's just a matter of working out the smaller details.
Yeah. So let me just for understanding, you think that the Knicks are going to get some actual, like, I mean, you know, not anything necessarily great out of this deal, but like, if it's going to be more than just a straight salary dump for Melo, because you know, looking at the cap math, it looks like unless the Rockets are willing to get rid of Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza, which, you know, I would imagine is A, because Ariza is kind of their only wing defender at this point, and B, because of his relationship with Chris Paul that I think helped facilitate that deal. It seems unlikely that they would trade him at this point. But, you know, the only way to get the math to work there is by trading Ryan Anderson at that point, which, you know, they tried to move him before they got Chris Paul, and they found, you know, not a whole lot of takers there. So it seems like he would be the piece to move from the Rockets in that deal to a third team. So
no,
I
think it ends up being Ryan Anderson. I think that if they – Houston moving Gordon and Ariza would be almost the equivalent of Cleveland moving Kevin Love. I think you're losing too much for what you gain there. I know, you know, Anthony brings a lot of value offensively, but that's not even really where they're lacking. I mean, it's a great addition to have. It's icing on the cake, of course. And it may be enough to put him over the top, but he's not coming in to, you know, fix their flaws necessarily. So I think that would be too much of a loss. And I don't see them giving them too much, getting Carmelo Anthony and then getting someone else somehow, at least not anybody of value. So I think it ends up having to be Ryan Anderson. How it happens is the question, though. If it's Portland, you know, would Portland really be willing to absorb Ryan Anderson as a thing, also while giving up an asset or two, which is what would end up going to the Knicks. What I am concerned with, though, is that if Cleveland truly is out of the picture, then Houston has a big advantage, right? Again, the Knicks are committed to trying to move Melo, and if Houston is the only team that could, you know, really get the deal done, then Houston actually has some leverage on what it is that gets moved. And in that sense, it is a little worrisome for the Knicks just because they might get shortchanged a little bit more than if it was a competitive offer from more than just one team, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, the Knicks really kind of lost a lot of that leverage the day they get Carmelo Anthony in a trade clause.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, you brought up the Portland Trailblazers, which is kind of an interesting thing because, you know, they have these huge contracts that they have that they gave out to guys like Evan Turner and Alan Crabb last year. So the Ryan Anderson fit there kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, unless maybe it would be like a kind of thing where they acquire Anderson and then dump off some of their bigger contracts on the Knicks. But, you know, it's interesting. Just because, especially with the lack of first-round picks that a lot of these teams have, or a lot of extra first-round picks anyway, you know, I'm very curious to see what the return there would be.
Yeah, real quick, not just that, not in terms of you know, who they're going to move just to satisfy the Knicks in the trade, but if it is Ryan Anderson that gets moved, then you might have to move guys just to make the money work, period. You know, so that's also something to keep in mind just because of how ridiculously big Ryan Anderson's contract is.
Yeah, this is a fascinating trade on a lot of different levels just because of how big contracts are and how capped out most of these teams are. And you know, the Knicks clearly wanting a return for Carmelo and you know, the limited. It's a really kind of fascinating situation. But, you know, I look to Hoops Inquirer to see first what's going on there, because I'm sure the trail will be on it if and when it does happen. But, Nick, let me ask you, if this trade does happen, how do you like the Carmelo Anthony fit with the Rockets?
Melo with the Rockets is a lot better than Ryan Anderson with the Rockets, which is, like, I guess part of the question here. I think Melo with the Rockets is kind of perfect. I think it's better than Cleveland for sure. I mean, first of all, like, few players in the league have played with a point guard Chris Paul's caliber, but, like, Carmelo Anthony has never, ever played to the point guard even approaching Chris Paul's caliber. Like, okay, remember, like, last summer when they traded for Rose, right? And people were like, Carmelo's never played with a point guard as good as Derrick Rose, right? Like, obviously, Chauncey Billups is very good, but people were saying that, right? I mean, I think I even wrote it last summer for the Inquirer when the trade happened. And that now sounds ridiculous, right? But with Chris Paul, it's actually true. I mean, Chris Paul is one of arguably the top three best point guards of all time, maybe. You know, I think there's an argument for that, although the winning isn't there. And like, Carmelo was going to get just crazy, crazy good looks. Like, and you know, Carmelo, as a jump shooter, like, it's so important that he gets the ball passed to him in the right place in his body, right? And, like, really good point guards can do that, and Derrick Rose was not good at that, but, like, Chris Paul would be very good at that, right? It'd be very fluid. And, you know, next to Harden and Paul together, I mean, it's the thing that everybody says, right? The Olympic Melo. But it's true, right? He would be able to essentially play off ball, where he's, like, a very smart player off ball. Like, people forget that Carmelo Anthony is, you know, in addition to being talented or whatever, because they rag on him for not passing the ball, but he is a brilliant basketball mind, right? Like, he knows where to be on the floor. He knows how to, like, read defenses. You know, he'd be like an apex level, I believe, like, tertiary option on that sort of team. I think that, like, as you know, bittersweet as it might be to see Melo leave New York, because he appears to really like it there, and I think the fans feel like an affinity for him. I think that the basketball world deserves to see him in a place, you know, as good as Houston, where, you know, that's maybe the best place in the league, aside from Golden State, we'd have a real chance to make a run at a title for the remainder of his career. The defense is going to be interesting because, you know, you guys kind of mentioned that a trade for Melo, like, might have to involve Trevor Ariza, who's one of their better wing defenders. And, you know, people rag on Melo a lot, again, for his defense, but I think it's one of those things sort of like with James Harden sometimes, where, like, there's just so much being asked of Melo one end of the floor that he gets disengaged or takes possessions off on defense, and it's almost understandable. You know, when Melo tries, he can be a really solid defender at the four, which is, I think, where they'd probably play him for most of the game, even if he started at the three, for example. So I think the fit would be awesome. Like, it would be probably the best position that Melo's ever been in his career. And be a shame that it comes so late. But again, like Melo's still very good. So, yeah, I'd be a huge fan of the fit for a lot of reasons. I think that he'd be lethal there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, you can see a starting lineup of like, Chris Paul, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Carmelo, and then Clint Capella. That's a dangerous lineup, man. You put Chris Paul or Harden, whoever, the pick and roll with Capella and have him run down the lane, and then you just have a guy spotting up or moving or whatever around him. Like, man, that's tough to guard. It's a fun thought experiment, and it's definitely interesting to think about. How realistic a shot, though, do you think that kind of team would have against the Golden State Warriors?
I think they'd have about as high as anybody else in the league. I mean, you know, LeBron is LeBron, and, you know, like, you can never count out LeBron, is what we've learned over the years. But I think they'd have a real chance. I mean, it depends, obviously, on, like, what the rest of that roster looks like. But, you know, I think that we're down on Melo now, right? I think that we're down on Melo. I think that we're down on CP3 because those guys have been in not great situations for a long time. Obviously, Chris Paul's was better, but, like, still not great. Like, the roster there was never that good in Los Angeles. So I think that, like, as like, a community, people who, like the NBA and write about the NBA, whatever, are kind of down on those two guys. And they forget, like, they still have a lot in the tank. And you put them in, with a player like James Harden, you put them all together, like, they'd have a real shot, I think, at Golden State. I mean, the defense would be tough, but I think if anybody would have it, it would be that defense.
Yeah, no, I think hopefully we'll get to see this team, and hopefully, you know, it just costs them Ryan Anderson and not any of their other depth. Because, you know, going from Ryan Anderson to Carmelo Anthony is, like, a huge, huge upgrade, theoretically at least. So, you know, let's see what that happens, and hopefully we'll get a challenger to Golden State. All right, so there's just one more thing that I think we need to talk about on this podcast, and that is what's really kind of been, like, at the crux of this whole Knicks controversy right now, and that's their search for a successor to Phil Jackson. And, you know, it was reported today that David Griffin, the former GM or president of the Cavs, withdrew his name from consideration for the position. And there's buzz around it because the Knicks wouldn't want David Griffin, who notoriously has, like, a bunch of very close guys that he works with and a lot of personality favors, to bring those guys in and replace some of the long-standing guarding guys, like probably Steve Mills. So, Trey, what can you tell us about that whole situation there?
Well, a couple of things about Griffin first. People mostly know him for his tenure in Cleveland, and rightfully so. But he's a guy who's been around the leagues forever. And around success, obviously the success in Cleveland over the last couple of years. But I believe he spent 16 or maybe it was 17 years in the Phoenix front office. And if we're talking about 17 years in the Phoenix front office before Cleveland, we're talking about, you know, the Steve Nash, Amar'e Stoudemire years, where certainly there was success there. So he's not a household name necessarily. I think he became that because of Cleveland, but people don't realize how good the guy might be. But it's just interesting because, you know, we were comparing the Cavs and the Knicks earlier in terms of what they're going through with their front office. And it's so funny that the reason why Griffin withdrew his name essentially is because he said, I'm not trying to join another situation like in Cleveland. He's already coming from a situation where he had an owner, you know, who was not necessarily against him all the time, but where he had, you know, issues with the owner, not necessarily the greatest owner in the world. And we've discussed that. And he was being undermined. He was being undermined, I would say, at least by, you know, LeBron, whether it was, you know, in a respectful way or a disrespectful way. I mean, we all make the jokes, right? LeBron's the GM in Cleveland anyway. And coming into the Knicks, you know, he was going to deal with Dolan in almost the same way that he was dealing with Gilbert in Cleveland. And if Mills was going to stay, you know, stick around and have the higher position, because it was reported by Ian Begley of ESPN that Mills would likely ascend to the president position and Griffin would just be the GM. You know, if Mills was going to have the power over him, in essence, you know, he's coming in to, yes, have the position just like in Cleveland, but almost face the same circumstances. And it's just, it's weird. It's weird. You know, I don't know how you deny a GM the right to bring in, you know, bring in his own staff, the right to carry out his duties, basically, which would be having total and final decision when it comes to basketball related stuff. I mean, if you're not going to let him do those two things, I don't know what you're bringing him in for. Might as well leave Mills and, you know, let Mills run the show. But, you know, it's weird because he basically said, you know, I could come in and be in the same situation as in Cleveland without winning, and I don't want to do that. And it's so – listen, it what it really does above everything is it continues to show that the Knicks are not a very attractive destination, and it's not going to change. And, you know, Frank Isola just said this a while ago. I read it in a story of his, and I don't agree with Frank in a lot. But he said, you know, how are the Knicks trying to change for the better when they refuse to change at all? And that's it's a great point. You know, you fire Phil Jackson, yes, but if you're gonna be scared of cleaning house, you know, if it's Mills really that Dolan is protecting, I don't know how they can expect to really, you know, move forward. And that's basically why the whole Griffin thing fell apart. I mean, they never even got to offer the guy a contract.
Yeah. Okay. Look, here's the fundamental issue with the Knicks. I don't know if you guys like, you know, conspiracy theories or if you dabble in that sort of thing, but there's this thing in conspiracy theory circles called the deep state, right? And we need to get into it too much, but look, suffice it to say that, like, there is a structure in the Knicks organization that's like a Knicks deep state. Like, it's like these people who really run things and who, like, really control everything, and who really will always have all the power and always angry for the power, and they will never leave. They have been here for administration to administration, and they will be here for as long as Dave Zolan owns the team. And we kind of referenced this earlier with Steve Mills and some of his guys, right? Like, part of the issue with David Griffin is that David Griffin wanted to bring in these people, and they were like, no, these people have always been there. The lunacy, I mean, there's obvious lunacy in so much that the Knicks do, but it bears, like, just putting a spotlight on it. Like, the lunacy, obviously, is like, David Griffin's like, hey, like, I've been successful in one thing, so let me bring my guys in. And the Knicks say to him, no, but we've like, been really bad and lost a lot, and we want to keep our guys because they're really good at that. Which is insanity. Like, but that's why, like, they can't. I mean, look, you know, people want to say so much about, like, Phil Jackson, and they want to say, like, Phil Jackson was a problem. And Phil Jackson was a lot of problems, right? Like, Phil Jackson was terrible with the media. Phil Jackson, like, had, like, weird antagonistic relationships with players. Like, there's a lot of reasons to criticize Phil Jackson, but one thing people don't talk about that much is that Phil Jackson was not, the same thing, was not allowed to bring in his own people. Like, he wasn't the only person he was allowed to bring in from outside was Clarence Gaines, the scout. Which is, like, that's, ooh, by the way, just assaulted Knicks reporters over accusations, probably rightfully, that he was laughing at a comment in that video. But like that's what I'm saying though. Like, Jackson was not allowed to bring in his people, so he was also undermined from the beginning. Like, just nobody that goes to the situation is put in a place to succeed at all. So like, yeah, David Griffin was right to not take it, and I don't know who ends up there, but like, that's, in my opinion, the fundamental problem. It's like this weird, like, bunch of cockroaches who, like, just never die out in the Knicks organization, and they never will.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. And, like, isn't that, I think that's, like, the definition of insanity, right? It's, like, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, that's, like, been the Knicks for the last, like, you know, 15 years. But, I mean, kind of good for David Griffin for realizing that he didn't want to work in this kind of situation again. Because even before going to, you know, Cleveland with Gilbert, it's like, as he said, he worked for the Suns and Robert Sarver, who also has a great reputation around the league. But, yeah, I mean, I think that until Dolan doesn't own the team anymore, you can really expect to see more of the same on this. And it's really just a tough situation for anyone to be in. Like, I totally agree with you, Nick. You can't really expect to succeed if you're put in a position where, like, you know, you don't have any people that you trust or any people that you work with, especially in a front office where, you know, the GM or the president will ultimately have personnel decisions. But, you know, it's really more of a collaborative thing, and you need different guys to do different things. You need to delegate responsibilities, and you really need to trust the guys that you have in place. And if you can't do that and you don't believe that these guys can do the job, it makes it really, really tough. So let me ask you this. One more thing, actually. Sorry. You know, I'm going to ask you, who do you think the Knicks should bring in, Trey? But, you know, I think kind of, for me, the only person that would be able to right the situation is, like, a Phil Jackson type who does have the gravitas to like, sway the people that are in place already and sway Dolan. But obviously with, like, a little more personnel experience than Jackson had. But, yeah, what do you think about that, Trey?
Well, I don't think anybody like that is available. And the biggest name, even before the whole Griffin thing, has been Ujiri, and I don't see him leaving Toronto for this mess. I really don't. You know, I would assume that with a guy like him, Dolan and Dolan's guys would, you know, give autonomy to him and basically put him in the same situation that they put Phil Jackson, let him exclusively do all the basketball stuff. But I don't think a guy like that exists. Maybe even if Ujiri was free, I don't think he'd be the type to willingly walk into the situation. I mean, you even have to remember how Phil and why Phil walked into this. Phil walked into this because of what he felt like was a connection to the organization because he played here. It wasn't like, you know, oh, it's a very attractive situation that's going on in New York right now.
$1 million.
Right. So, you know, I don't think that anybody of that stature is out there. I think at this point, the best hire might be Mills if you don't want to, you know, just keeping Mills and giving him both positions. If you don't want to be more dramatic than you have to be, you know, you might bring in another guy. And if it's going to be Mills overstepping, I don't see the point in doing that. But, you know, the timing of everything is weird. They had issues with, you know, and Nick knows this firsthand because we were reporting on it before the draft. They've had issues with Phil for a while now. They, you know, a lot of things that he was doing was really, in particular with Dolan, it was really irritating him and was, you know, building up to become a reason to fire him. And they certainly had all the fuel to fire him before the draft, and they did it after. That to me doesn't make any sense, right? You know, he ends up drafting a rookie who wasn't really towards the top on, you know, the boards of a majority of the front office. The majority of the front office wanted either Dennis Smith Jr., which is the guy that Dolan wanted. That was one of the things that really irritated Dolan towards the end of Phil's tenure. And Malik Monk. Malik Monk, I was told Malik Monk was actually promised that he would be picked if he was available by the time that the Knicks were on the clock. And, you know, neither of those two guys get selected. And not to say that, you know, their pick is going to be awful, but it's certainly something that has to be taken into consideration now because it was Phil's guy, and, you know, they fire Phil now. So they kind of just stuck with whatever it was that Phil decided, you know, in his last few days before he was fired. So the timing of everything is so weird. Even with the Tim Hardaway Jr. signing, right? Let's say they do bring in a guy that is gonna, you know, he's going to have autonomy. Let's say they somehow bring in Ujiri. What if Ujiri didn't want that contract? You know, now he has to deal with that. He has to deal with the pick that, you know, didn't necessarily have to be made by Phil. And on top of, you know, cleaning up house, cleaning up the mess that has been created from over the last couple of years, Noah's contract, you know, this whole Carmelo Anthony trade, whether it happens or not. So the timing of everything, you know, is poorly executed. You know, I feel like it was done with the right intentions, but as Nick actually told me, it feels like they didn't have much of a backup plan or, you know, a plan at all for the aftermath after they fired him, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of just seems like that does kind of seem like the Knicks' plan is to go in without a plan, you know? And I don't know, it just seems like a team that, especially in the current environment in the NBA, where you see more and more guys forcing their ways to destinations and forcing their way and you know, trying to team up at different places, it seems like New York should be a destination like that, you know? Like, it should have the appeal of L.A. or a Miami or wherever. You know, it just doesn't, and I think that just speaks volumes about how dysfunctional the Knicks organization is. But, I mean, you know, to your point, let me ask you, Nick, like, is there any real difference between Phil Jackson era and, you know, the Phil Jackson era that everyone was just so overjoyed that ended and, you know, the current, like, the future, the current, the present and the future of the Knicks? Or is it going to be the same old, as long as Dolan's in charge?
So, earlier today, Chris Herring, who formerly of the Wall Street Journal, now of 538 and ESPN, he was tweeting about how, you know, in a lot of ways it feels like the Knicks are, like, right on the cusp of, like, coming over, like, this weird, awkward hump in their franchise history and becoming, like, normal. Like, they have all their draft picks. Like, they have Chris Porzingis. They're going to move on from Melo. Like, Jackson is gone, whatever. And I read that, and, like, for a second I was like, man, he's kind of right. And then I was like, no, wait, hold up a second. Like, they spent $71 million to bring back a guy they traded 2 years ago who, like, was never that good. Like, they looked at the Phil Jackson tenure, right? And they were like, okay, now what went wrong here? And apparently they determined that holistically the answer is we traded Tim Hardaway Jr. for Jerry and Grant. And they're like, all right, let's just undo that. We can wipe away and we can just – the whole Phil Jackson era, and we can just start over from before that. So they went out and they got Tim Hardaway Jr. Like, it kind of feels like nothing changed. If anything changed, like, it's all kind of negative. I mean, Chris Porzingis is there. That's good. Like, that's a major improvement. Like, you have, you know, something that the franchise hasn't really had since Patrick Ewing, which is, like, a young guy that you drafted who could be the cornerstone of the franchise. But besides that, like, it just seems like, you know, the basketball guy, right? Like, Phil Jackson, like, you know, Mr. 11 rings himself, right? Like, the basketball guru, like, the one who's, like, the closest to being, like, a religious figure in basketball, like, you couldn't fix it, right? So, like, if anything, it's, like, the Knicks seem, like, more unsalvageable and, like, shipwrecked than they have maybe at any point. Like, even like thinking like the Isaiah Thomas years, like, I mean, maybe like with hindsight, it's a little bit, you know, different. But I mean, I just feel like the Isaiah Thomas years weren't really this hopeless, right? Like, at least you had like a recent memory of them being really good, right? And you know, one thing that Trey and I have learned and not really reported, which is just like a sign of like how nuts this is and how much they could really go back to the pre-Pill era, is that like the word is that, like, nobody in that franchise, and I mean like nobody, is untouchable. Like, that's including Kristaps Porzingis, right? So like they could realistically trade Kristaps, which is supposedly one of the things they fired Phil for, right? Like for souring his relationship with Porzingis, right? They could trade that. They could trade this young franchise cornerstone player, and they'd really be back at like nothing. And like, that's not just me, you know, with conjecture. Like, that's what we've heard, and by all accounts, it, you know, it's usually true. That's crazy.
Let me ask you this: you think that, like, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, do you think that a Kristaps Porzingis trade from the Knicks would actually benefit the franchise in the long run? Like, do you think that the fan revolt, if Kristaps is traded, would just dissuade them from doing these stupid things anymore, to the point where they're just like, all right, we got to do something about this because no one likes the Knicks anymore?
Yeah, dude. I don't even want to entertain that with a response. Trey, do you have anything to say about that? That sounds horrendous.
Listen, I'll tell you this. Look, they were just talks while they were happening under Phil. We were told that Dolan would veto any Porzingis trade just because he views Porzingis as not just a centerpiece, but as a businessman, he views him as the cash cow of the organization, which, you know, I guess is fair. But there was an interesting, I don't know if it was an actual offer or whatever it was, but there was an interesting scenario thrown out there that I might have bid on if I was the GM. That was Devin Booker and the Suns pick in this draft. If that was out there, I might have taken that. But other than that, I don't think the Knicks would realistically, you know, find a way to be able to do that and be able to justify, like, hey, look, we got a good return. I think it's a stupid idea overall.
And, you know, like, everything that I was reading about that whole situation was, like, they were asking for Devin Booker, and the Suns kind of were like, yeah, I don't think we're going to do that. But, yeah, man, it's kind of crazy. Which I guess is kind of normal in Knicks land. I think that they run the risk of alienating the fans at this point, like you said, Nick, because they have been so dysfunctional and so bad for so long. Like, the Isaiah Thomas years are maybe as dysfunctional as these ones, but, like, you know, you said it, there was a little bit of a glimmer of hope in the recent past, whereas now it's like, you know, you have that one, like, 2011 year where they got the 2 seed and they accidentally kind of, like, fell ass backwards into that, you know? And then they reverted back to what didn't work the next year after that, which I guess is kind of like a symbolic of the Knicks as a whole. 2013. But yeah, man, it's kind of nuts. And I don't know what, as a Knicks fan, I'm gonna do. Trey, you have any ideas on what the Knicks are gonna do going forward? If they have any kind of cohesive anything, or you think it's just gonna be like this from here on out?
I think the next move ends up being the Anthony trade, I guess, and that may not even be for the next week or two. They have been interesting in moving Courtney Lee. I don't know if they end up doing that anymore. Mills has stated that he likes the idea of Lee next to Hardaway. It would probably be the smallest 2-3 combination in the league, but, you know. So I think the next move ends up being the Melo trade, if it happens at all. I don't know who they bring in for that position in the front office. Not at this point. There have been murmurs of Joe Dumars or Mark Jackson here and there, but I don't, you know, Mark Jackson has a very comfortable job right now. I don't see why he would leave that for the situation that he'd be walking into in New York, especially, you know, given all the circumstances we just went over. That, you know, Griffin was looking at. I don't think that happens anytime soon. I don't think they have what it takes to land even a free agent. Maybe they land Rondo. And I suppose that's, you know, that's a positive if it's for 1 year. But at this point, the Melo trade seems like the thing that will happen most, you know, the soonest. But aside from that, even after the Melo trade, I don't know what else would he even be able to do, or what they end up doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it seems like the Melo trade is definitely the next domino to fall, and then I guess, you know, we'll see if they can work on moving some veterans and actually adhering to Mills' alleged plan to go young and try to be a more youthful and athletic team. All right, I think we're almost out of time, but Nick, before we go, can you give Nick fans out there just like a glimmer of hope, like something to latch onto, like a silver lining, something there that, because, you know, we painted a pretty bleak picture on this podcast, I think. So give the Knicks fans a little something to be hopeful about.
So I think that we have like 500 million years until the sun burns out. So I don't know, like, this is temporary, you know, like, life is short and we'll all die one day. So, like, you know, you have to deal with the Knicks for all of eternity. Like, the absolute longest you have to deal with the Knicks, the absolute longest would be for another, like, 500 million years. So, like, you know, it's bad, but it will be over one day. Besides that, let's see, there is another basketball team in New York, and they are in a much better position somehow. You could be a fan of them.
Yeah, that's about a good offseason. We'll talk about that on another podcast, but yeah, I mean, that's about a good offseason. Like, this is the official Hoops Inquirer stamp of approval. If you want to jump ship from the Knicks and go to the Nets, now is the time.
I have a question.
What's up, Trey?
One of the things that the Knicks, obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, always get attached to is, well, who wouldn't want to go to New York? How long until the Nets totally steal that attraction from the Knicks?
That's a good question. I think you're going to see that, like, I think a lot depends on how D'Angelo Russell develops, because, you know, the Nets are still in such a poor situation from the Boston trade, that, you know, players want to play with good players and they want a chance to win. And the Nets just are not anywhere near that stage in their like team building process yet. But, you know, next year is the last year they don't have their own pick. They're probably they played pretty well toward the end of the year last year. Like, they're gonna be bad for a few more years just because they destroyed their future. But, you know, I think that it only takes really like one guy to really like want to go to the Nets and play with the Nets, and if they can strike lottery gold in the next couple of drafts, or you know, if D'Angelo Russell actually develops into a star caliber player, like, I think it's really not going to be too long before you see guys looking like, hey, Brooklyn is not a bad place to be. Like, I might want to be in New York. I want the opportunities that come with that. And you'll see guys that are going to be choosing Brooklyn over the Knicks. And I think that might be a wake up call for the Knicks too.
That's interesting. You know, it's interesting because, just real quick, not to cut you off, it's interesting because the reason that they suck right now is because they had a front office that made, in particular, one very stupid decision, but, you know, a couple of very bad decisions. And so with that, you know, they countered by actually cleaning house and bringing in people who know what they're doing. Hint, hint, wink, wink, you know, at maybe another organization that may be interested in doing the same thing and maybe rebounding one day.
Yeah, and to that, you know, I was going to say, actually, like, that's what the Nets, I think, are building, is that's attractive over there. They're building a culture over there. They're building, like, they have a goal, and they're working cohesively as an organization to get to that goal. And like, you know, you see them making smart moves right now, where they're using their cap space in smart ways to get picks. And like, it's kind of crazy that even though the Nets mortgage their future and they let themselves in this completely untenable position, like, they're kind of in a better position than the Knicks right now. Like, maybe not because they don't have a guy like Kristaps Porzingis' caliber, but, like, I would probably take, like, if I were going to bet on who's going to be a more successful franchise in, like, 3, 4, or 5 years, like, I would take the Nets every single time. Like, what do you think about that whole thing, Nick?
So, I think that this is the last summer where we have to hear people be like, you know, well, I mean, the Knicks have New York, you know, the Big Apple, who doesn't want to go to the city where dreams are made of. I think this was it. I think, like, now it's over. It's dead. Like, we can stop talking about it. I think the Nets, if anybody has that, the Nets have it. Like, I went to a concert a couple weeks ago. It was like a reggaeton concert, basically. I mean, it was like, it was a weird concert, man. It was like, you guys know who Bad Bunny is? It was like Bad Bunny. He's like a, I don't know what he does. He sings in Spanish, but he's good. It was like him and like Fetty Wap and like Fat Joe and like Farruko, you know who that is. It was like a real weird assortment of people. But I went there at Barclays Center, and everybody was like, having a great time, and like the crowd control people couldn't control the crowd, and like, everybody was like kind of like congregated around the stage, and I was like, man, this is fun. This could never happen in Madison Square Garden. So yeah, I think the Nets already have that. Like, we are the enjoyable, uplifting place to go in New York. That's it. It's over.
Yeah, man, and you know they have like a little bit of like the not quite to the extent because the Lakers have actually like been good as opposed to the Knicks. But they do. They definitely have like a little bit of like, oh, a little brother kind of feel that the Clippers had. But yeah, if they get like if they can swing something like Chris Paul deal from the Clippers, like, you know, the Knicks could be the happening spot. Like, everybody's moving to Brooklyn. Like, I don't see why not the NBA guys. I don't know, man. It'll be interesting to watch in the next few years. And as the Nets kind of rise from the ashes and the Knicks stay there. you guys got any last thoughts before we head out on the Knicks?
All good on this end.
Like, I'm going to miss the triangle. I spent a lot of time watching the triangle. I kind of started to like the triangle. I'm going to miss it. That's, I don't know, man. I'm sad.
How about this?
You know,
how about the potential rookie of the year, Dennis Smith Jr., not a fan of the triangle, probably why they didn't take him.
Yeah.
He's been so good in so many. He's been so good. He's been so good. Tilly Keenan didn't even play. I'm upset. I'm sure he should be like fine anyways. But like, we could have. Man, I'm mad. I don't want to talk about this. I'm done. I'm done with this podcast. Podcast is stupid.
I think in perfect Knicks fashion, we're going to end the podcast on a sour note. all right, guys. You can follow Nick at Nick Martinez NY. Right? Is that wrong, right? Did I get this, son?
That's me right now. You got it.
You can follow Trey Rodriguez at Trey Rodriguez NY.
Yes, sir.
Get that one?
Yes, sir. Yeah. If you're waiting for confirmation, that's right.
All right. Check out those guys for some great Knicks coverage. All the latest over there. Hoops Inquirer is continuing to pump out some good stuff in the off season. You can find me at Will11_Smith. I got it. Like, we're gonna have to brainstorm some names for me to change it. Maybe I'll do Will Smith NY, even though it's almost definitely taken. All right, guys. Hopefully we'll catch you guys soon with another special guest, our fan favorite and biggest fan, Clint, talking about Utah Jazz and Gordon Hayward. So tune in. Thanks for listening, guys. Is this the start of like the Knicks support group? Is that where we're at? Is that what we're doing right now?
I'm not a Knicks fan.
It doesn't matter if you're a Knicks fan. You cover the Knicks. You need it more than anyone. Like Knicks fans don't care anymore. Knicks fans are like whatever. Like, this is our reality. Like, you are obligated to cover this team right now.
Listen, a lot of people started caring out of nowhere when Phil got fired. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people thought, you know, the fucking heavens were opening, and
I thought that. On that boat. I
you know, that's what kind of made it fun, that the Tim Hardaway Jr. signing came out of nowhere. Because if, like, Waj would have, like, have hinted at it, like, it would have taken away some of the fun out of it, for being honest. You know? Because then you have time to prepare yourself, and then it happens, and then, you know, by then you've kind of accepted it.